If you're a Disney Plus subscriber and you're watching The Mandalorian, Jack and I have a podcast for you.
Every week, we'll discuss the latest episode of The Mandalorian and talk about other great content and maybe some not so great content on Disney Plus as well.
As two lifelong Star Wars fans, we have a ton of fun geeking out over all the little details of the show, and we want you to join us every Monday.
So search for Disney Plus Reviews. That's Disney P-L-U-S Reviews. Hey, Phil, how about that Baby Yoda? Baby Yoda says, what's a podcast?
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that probably sounds very American right now, it's SifPop. Welcome to SifPop Weekly, streaming live most weekends or available to download later in your podcast feed. Unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's a minor master of his time. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
There was a time where I was a minor, yes.
Each week we'll chat about movies, television, whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. Whether she wears pants or not on the podcast is completely her choice. It's the Curious Love!
Hello! I am wearing a skirt this time, so
whatever you choose is fine. Whatever you choose.
And out of context, that just sounds like a very confusing statement.
As far as I know, I have never appeared on this show pantsless. Don't know where Aaron's getting it from, but, you know.
I'm just saying it's totally up to you. Like, you know, it's such a big deal in Jungle Cruise. It was like, oh, she's wearing pants. It's like, okay, gotcha. I get it. I get it. Enough pants jokes. I get it. We are excited to have Lo back. Lo, we've got a Disney movie to talk about, and you are a Disney expert, so I figured we could have you on this week to chat about Jungle Cruise. We're also going to chat about Stillwater, the new Matt Damon movie. And since we're talking Matt Damon, we're going to talk best ever Matt Damon movies for our best ever challenge. And then, of course, we'll have some buried treasure and some other fun along the way. How's everybody doing? Everybody doing all right, doing okay, everybody's good.
Trying not to melt, you know.
It has been hot. Yeah. Around here, it's been in the mid-90s all week, and I know many places are experiencing the same kind of heat wave, so I would like to...
It's only 85 here right now, so I suppose I shouldn't complain.
Yeah, it's actually in the 80s. We had a big storm come through last night and kind of cooled it off, so yeah, it's supposed to be a little cooler this week, so...
That was a pretty fun storm, yeah.
Yeah.
But we got movies.
That's right. Welcome to Weathercast, where we talk about
with
movies.
With no storms in these movies, spoiler.
All right, let's get into it. Yeah, the water is very still. Let's get into it. We'll talk a little bit about Jungle Cruise.
There is a legend in the jungles of the Amazon of a tree that heals all. It could change the world. But if it gets into the wrong hands, it could awaken a great evil. I believe that the legend is real.
Which it's not.
And I'm going to find it.
Which you want.
And when I do, just imagine the lives that could be saved.
I've been looking for this tree longer than anybody. I've tracked the legend to every village, every island. Nothing. You're searching for something that can't be found.
Dr. Lily Houghton enlists the aid of wisecracking skipper Frank Wolf to take down the Amazon, take her down the Amazon in his dilapidated boat. Together, they search for an ancient tree that holds the power to heal, a discovery that will change the future of medicine. I don't know. It sounded very drastic. I had to give it that little oomph.
Yeah.
In our members-only pre-show, we talked about Disney rides becoming movies. And this is another kind of attempt by Disney to take a popular ride from Walt Disney World and Walt Disneyland and put it into a movie. So yeah, let's talk about Jungle Cruise. You got The Rock and Emily Blunt and many, many others. What did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Lo, start us off.
I'm gonna say a solid liked it. Thought it was fun.
Andrew?
Same. Solid liked it.
I am going to go with the low side of liked it.
Ooh.
I was teetering into high side if it was just okay. At the end of the day, I had enough fun, I think, to put me in the low side of liked it. Lo, I'm going to let you start. You and Andrew liked it about the same, but what are some of your general thoughts on Jungle Cruise?
Well, I think it probably helps that I'm a massive theme park fan in general, and definitely of Disney parks. And so I spent a large portion of this movie being like, oh, that's a line from the ride. Oh, that's a left turn to the ride. Like, oh. So like that just kind of ups the excitement without the movie really doing anything. So I was already having fun with that. Also, you are determined to make me watch movies that are about immortal warriors. So once again, I was watching Immortal Warriors fight.
Listen, at least there's not a traumatic pregnancy in this one. I mean,
that's
come
true.
On.
Those are my two expertise. But yeah, no, I thought I just had a lot of fun with it. I think that I'm a huge fan of the Pirates movies. Well, of most of the Pirates movies, the fifth one doesn't exist. So I was already kind of primed to like a sort of, you know, action adventure fantasy kind of Disney movie. Like I'm like rooting for it. I want it to be good. And when it wasn't awful, I was like, yes, thank you. This was passable. I had fun. I do have some gripes, but most of them are like technical more than they are like the actual story. So yeah. I had a lot of fun. That's my
Andrew,
overall.
What about you?
Jesse Plemons.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. No, he is my favorite part of the movie. He was hilarious. Just whenever he's a supporting actor and he just allows himself to fully become just a weird, zany character, kind of like in a Game Night, you know, where he just goes all in on that character. Same here with the prince. It's just so funny. The movie is funny. I'll say that it's a movie I'm glad I watched because I had a good time, but it's not one that I would seek out to rewatch. It's not like you guys feel like watching Jungle Cruise again? No. It was a one and done, but I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah, I think fun is the key word here. I think it's obvious that was kind of the calling card of the production was let's just have fun, let's show fun, let's be fun. There's also a creepy factor to this movie that is, for a PG-13, it doesn't pull any punches. You know, there's some real death, brutal at times, you know, bloodless, but brutal. And there are creatures and, you know, curses and all that kind of stuff. Similar to the Pirates, right? Pirates kind of deals in this same world as well. I think I had just a lot of fun with, which you've got to do if you're doing Jungle Cruise, because like you mentioned, Lo, the ride is all about fun, right? The ride is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when you are a captain of the Jungle Cruise, you have certain lines that you're given, and then you also have a little bit of freedom to, you know, introduce some of your own jokes.
I mean, there's a bit of a sort of, and this might seem silly for a minimum wage job at a theme park, but there's a bit of lore around skippers of the Jungle Cruise. They're definitely kind of the rock stars. I was never a skipper. I know people that were. So like, there's a lot of like, oh, they have to do this. They can't do that. Blah, blah, blah. Like, and it's not all accurate, but from what I understand, yeah, they've got their set, you know, set of jokes, but they're allowed to kind of experiment and,
it really is kind of a stand-up comedy gig.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It's all about dry humor and the puns. And, you know, Dwayne Johnson's character, Frank, definitely is delivering that. Like, he embodies.
Yeah, jokes to the max.
Hell yeah. He embodies the skipper mentality of the theme parks, for sure.
It would surprise no one to know that that's my favorite ride at Disney, you know, because of the puns and the dry humor. And I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. I will say, I don't know that Dwayne Johnson gets pun delivery. I like he's telling the jokes, but he's not like the dryness isn't there. And I know
it's too dry, actually.
Well, no, I think it's too wet.
It's a lack of delivery.
For me, it was more in the reaction, because I agree with you, but for me, it was more in the reaction of the people that were on his boat. Like, when you're on the Jungle Cruise, like, you're there and you're like, yes, these jokes are funny. I'm going to laugh at them. Like, yes, they're silly and so obvious and like over the top setups with like really dry punchlines that you're just kind of supposed to like groan at. But that's part of the fun of it.
But
whereas the people that were on his boat in that kind of intro sequence were all like very confused. Like, what is happening?
Yeah,
so that changes.
Like, they mistook the fact they mistook the groaner idea of a pun. And they took the fun out of it. The idea is like, yes, you groan, but you're also kind of laughing a little bit because you know there's like, something clever there.
Oh, come
like,
on.
He and, like, did they, get they, there. There's this cute moment where like a little girl was like, I don't know that I understand what you're saying. And then he like said something about a hippo and she's like, hippos aren't native to the Amazon or whatever. And he just kind of was like, shh, don't tell them. And she kind of was like, oh, okay, I'm in on the joke now. And it felt like, oh, we're almost there. Like, everybody's going to be in on the joke now. We're going to get the actual feeling of the ride, but they didn't actually go any further.
So, of course, you know, my review of Jungle Cruise quickly devolves into delivery of puns. I apologize. There's much more to this movie than that. In fact, that's really a very small part of mostly the front end of this movie.
Yeah.
It is a part of his character, but they get a lot of those, like you said, those wink, wink, nudge, nudge lines out of the way, you know, pretty quickly. So you're not waiting for them the whole movie, you know. Otherwise, everybody's in the theater. And I shouldn't say everybody. A lot of people are in the theater going, when's the backside of water joke coming? When's the backside of water joke coming? So, yeah.
Who saw this in theaters?
That's a good question. I didn't. I did on Disney Plus.
Me too.
Same.
So, yeah. So
if it wasn't on Disney Plus, I would have gone to theaters. They're open here, but I'm still at the point where I'm like, hey, if there's an option not to be in public right now, I'll take it.
Yeah. So yeah, I think fun is the key word. I think Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson are having a good time together. I think they work well together. You already mentioned Jesse Plemons is really funny in this. Just absolutely chewing the scenery and having a good time.
Jack Whitehall
is really funny in this. So, and then you've got Edgar Ramirez and a couple others who are playing kind of the villains of this.
Paul Giamatti shows up for a bit.
Like bookends, just like weird Paul Giamatti bookends. Like, this must be,
he's like, hey, what are you doing this weekend?
He pulls a classic just to keep it on brand. He pulls a classic Matt Damon cameo.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. That could actually lead into one of my cons.
Sure, go
for it. I think
that
the movie should have stuck with just one villain instead of having, you know, multiple, you know, different ways that this could go. I think it would have served the movie a lot better. I don't know which of the villains they should have stuck with. You know, one could have led more into the mysticism of it all, and the other could have just been evil, but could have had a lot of the funny lines. So it would have worked either way, but I don't think both of them together works.
Yeah.
I have opinions on that.
Go for it.
Mostly because I mentioned that I at least did during the pre-show, that I am a huge Pirates of the Caribbean fan. And, this is basically the plot, like the plot skeleton is taken from Dead Man's Chest. It's about a cursed crew. Instead of being part of the ship, they're part of the jungle. Each of these different cursed crew members is like a different part of the jungle. We've got the honey guy and the roots guy and the snake guy and, you know, all these different things, very similar to the sort of like seashell guy and the hammerhead shark head person. And there's also your kind of real world grounded greedy person in Jesse Plemons' character, or the Commodore or something in the Pirates movies, who's like after the heart. It felt like a very similar plot, and that they were just like, hey, we have this movie that did really well and it's also based off a ride. Let's just kind of like, it's not like word for word, but it's a very similar plot.
No, yeah, it's definitely a play by numbers Pirates movie.
Yeah,
that was my biggest con, and the reason that I almost landed and it was just okay. It was so paint by numbers to me. As fun as it is, and another positive for me that we haven't talked about, as beautiful as it is, I thought this movie was very beautiful to look at. I felt like it just felt lazy in some ways, because, you know, it was one of those things where I feel like I've seen this plot before, not just in the Pirates movie, but just, it's just, I don't know. Listen, I've talked before about Disney understanding formula and going with formula, but within the formula, you have to do enough different to keep my brain activated so I don't feel like I'm watching the same movie again. And this one bordered for me. Like, it was like occasionally it was doing fine, and then sometimes I'm just like, yeah, of course they have to go find some sort of object that's going to bring people back to life, and this is how what's going to happen, and the sacrifice is going to be this, and this is going to be that, and you know, and apologies if any of that sounds spoilery. I don't think I gave any specifics, but I'm just saying, you know, I've seen it so much, it takes a lot of the adventure out of it for me. This movie did have one moment that was surprising, and it was in pretty much the middle of the movie. It wasn't an end of the movie story turn. It was a middle of the movie story turn, and it actually surprised me, and I was back in. I was like, oh, that's, you know, I didn't see that coming. That's,
I literally really had to tweet about it. I was so like, I was like, oh my gosh, this twist just like, whoa, it like got me.
Yeah. So it did have that, but for the most part, yeah, I'm with you on it being kind of same as some,
paint by numbers, yeah.
Some other things. Paint by numbers, yeah.
Well, my biggest con with the movie is the fact that it's the ending in this movie. That's my biggest con with this movie, is the ending, because it sets up this whole, you know, this sacrifice, you know, this great thing, and you're like, wow, you got to make a decision now. What do you truly value and stuff like that? And then after a decision's made, it's like, okay, but what if we just did this too? And I'm like, well, that just retcons everything that you've been building to, you know? Yeah. And it kind of ruined, not ruined, but a little bit for the movie for me, you know?
Yeah.
I also felt like that was sort of weak, but I was feeling that it was weak even before they made that decision to sort of have it both ways. There was a, basically, you know, you're spending the movie choosing between, okay, are they going to go this way with the sacrifice or this way with the sacrifice? And one of them was very obviously the one that they should do, which is like what kind of was end up being chosen. And the other one felt very impersonal.
Selfish.
Very like it didn't matter all that much. I would have almost, I mean, and this kind of comes down to, I wish that we'd gotten more into Lily's character, because I felt like there were kernels of stuff. Like, she's very scared of like drowning, and they never go into that. And I kept expecting there to be a flashback or some sort of story, because she has this history with the kind of mythology of this area of the Amazon. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, we're going to figure out like something traumatic happened to her, and that's why she's going after this, this mystical, herb or whatever. Yeah. And they never really went into it. So for me, it made the other choice, like, you go with that one. Like,
Yeah.
100%.
Did you guys think the CG was a little undercooked?
Yes. It was so weird.
Yeah, there's a tiger in this movie. I don't think that gives up too much away. They're tigers near the jungle. But
not the Amazon.
But in this case.
Jaguar? Is that?
Sure. Whatever.
Okay.
Big cat. Big scary cat. Claws, teeth.
Murder cat. Murder cat.
That's how bad the CG was. I couldn't tell if it was a tiger or a jaguar.
Wasn't that bad.
Is that an elephant or a jaguar? I can't tell.
He had like a pet monkey, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, I did feel like it was a little undercooked. Like,
there's a moment where frogs were hopping that felt, they were like gravity defying a little bit.
Yeah.
Which was sort of weird.
Yeah. For such a heavy CGI movie, it felt like the CGI was an afterthought.
Yeah.
Which is like, also strange because
where they were just so inundated with CGI. They're like, oh yeah, this entire movie is going to be CGI. And you're like, what? And then, you have 3 months to do the entire movie. It kind of felt like that.
Well, and I always feel bad bringing this up. I mean, maybe not bad, but at least there's some texture to any conversation that involves this, because you can talk about the CG being undercooked, and your brain may immediately be like, you know, those CG artists messed this up. And honestly, what I'm understanding more and more is that the pressure they're under and the time frame they're under just isn't enough to get this stuff right, and it's not really their fault. That they are pretty much overworked and underpaid part of most movies at this point. So, I think there's something about the demand of the time frame that maybe movies need to be a little more either willing to go practical or to take the time it needs, you know, to really develop. I mean, people make fun of James Cameron for taking so long to deliver the Avatar movies, but that's a big part of it for him is he wants to get it right. And it takes time to get it right.
And am I wrong here? I might just be making an assumption because it feels like every movie is like this nowadays. Was this pushed back at all because of COVID? Like, was this supposed to be last summer? Because
I don't know, actually.
No? Okay, because I could also see it being like an even more like, you guys even had more time to work on this. Like,
like,
the only one I know that was kind of close similarly in like style to this was Death on the Nile. That was pushed back.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we kind of finish up this review? Any last things?
I have two things.
Yeah, go for it.
I've got one negative and one positive. My negative is sort of kind of coming onto the more technical side of things is like the plot, while I was like, I recognize a lot of these earmarks from other movies, I was still, it was fun. It was fine. It didn't really ruin the movie for me. But the editing was a bit strange. There was a lot of times where they would cut from one scene to another with zero like establishing shot.
Yes.
There's specifically one that stuck out in my head where Lily like gets mad and she storms away. And then in the very next scene, she's sitting down with another character to like have a conversation. And it's very obviously an hour or more later because we cut after we've cut to them having this conversation, we cut to like the other characters kind of having like a sort of like party dinner, like bonfire thing. And it was like, why didn't we start with that cut to be like, hey, it's a couple hours later. We're in a different location. We're in a different time frame. Yeah. It just, and there were quite a few moments like that I was like, it feels like this movie, which was around 2 hours long, was originally 2.5 hours long. And they were like, it's got to be 2 hours, like cut what you can type of thing.
It does feel a little chopped up at points.
There were scenes missing. It was like shots missing was the weird part for me.
Yeah, I think if I understand what you're saying, it's not as if that feeling where you can tell a movie has had something chopped out of the middle and stuff doesn't make sense anymore. Yeah, that's not what we're talking about. The idea is that there's just some strange moment-to-moment editing choices that doesn't really confuse the story or the plot.
Not at all.
Just doesn't quite as make as much sense visually or progressively as it might.
And then
I can see what you're saying.
My good thing is that after years of Disney saying, our first LGBT character, and it's like a person in the background like hugging someone of the same sex,
right.
They actually had like a coming out scene that is not ambiguous. I mean, they never actually say the word gay, but it's like, it's not ambiguous. Like you watch that scene and you're like, oh, this character is gay. 100%. And I think they did a pretty good job with it. Like they didn't focus on him. They didn't give this character a love interest or anything. But I think that given Disney's track record, I'm like, oh, are we past the era of these sort of like bit cameos for like tokenism points.
It'll be interesting to see how that progresses and you know, kind of how they approach that topic specifically, because it has been such a landmine topic for them. How much they do, it's too much for these people and not enough for these people, and it's like it's been an interesting thing to see them try to figure that out. And I think for many people, it's, it's almost hard to give praise because it's like,
Little too late type of thing. Yeah, absolutely. Kind of thing. But I think in a vacuum, for me at least, it felt like it was enough. This movie wasn't trying to be like huge about that. They just had a character that was LGBT. Yeah. Like it wasn't a main focus or anything, but I just think that they did a good job of making it part of the world without it being a main focus.
Yeah. Andrew, did you have any final thoughts?
Two things. This movie actually got me excited for the Uncharted movie. I'll say that.
Yes.
The other one is no post-credit scenes.
That would be my final thing as well. Not just Uncharted, but there is something about Explorer, Indiana Jones, Uncharted, like Tomb Raider, whatever it might be. There's something about these movies I really dig. And, you know, I don't know if it's I don't know if it's the puzzle solving. I don't know if it's, you know, exactly what it is, but I think a lot of it's environmental as well. So yeah, anyways, that would be my one last thing about it as well. All right, I think we can move on. Let's take a look at Stillwater.
Allison came here for college, and that's where she met this girl, Lena. One night, she found Lena dead and called the police. All they cared about was Allison sleeping with some Arab girl.
I loved her.
I know you did.
But everybody thinks that I killed her.
We have exhausted every possible legal action.
Is the lawyer not helping you?
I'm doing it myself for now.
I could help.
Bill Baker, an American oil rig roughneck from Oklahoma, travels to Marseille to visit his estranged daughter, Allison, who's in prison for a murder she claims she did not commit. Confronted with language barriers, cultural differences, and a complicated legal system, Bill builds a new life for himself in France as he makes it his personal mission to exonerate his daughter. Matt Damon, front and center in this one, but you've also got Abigail Breslin playing the daughter, Allison. Camille Cotton in here as well. What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, you get to kick us off this time.
You know, for a 19-hour movie, I thought this one was actually okay.
It's a little less than 19. Lo, what about you?
I liked it. It was love it for almost the whole movie, and then some stuff happened at the end that it wasn't my favorite.
We're going to have a SIF spoil on this one, aren't we? Yeah. We're going to have a SIF spoil on this one. I agree. There's enough here that I don't feel comfortable talking about, spoiler-wise, that I think we should do a SIF spoil on this one. I understand what you're saying, Lo. I am in the mid to high liked it. I think this is a really good movie. I actually dig the end, and maybe we can talk more about that in the SIF spoil. It's one of my favorite things about some of the choices that this movie makes. And this movie makes choices. Can we start there? It sounds like I like it the most. So I guess I'll just start.
Go for it.
This movie makes choices. Like it's not one of those movies that kind of lays everything in the easiest place. Like, it puts its characters in positions and places, its protagonists in positions and places, character traits of the people that we're, you know, learning about. It makes it very complex, and it's just not something that a lot of stories do in this way. This is Tom McCarthy directing this, who did Spotlight, right?
Spotlight.
As well as some others, the Pete's Dragon remake, since, you know, we've had a Disney conversation, that was Tom McCarthy as well. That's not true. I'm sorry. I was thinking of the, David Lowry. I apologize. I saw The Green Knight recently as well, which we can talk about at some point.
Yes, we will.
This one is really, really well done. And you can see that Tom McCarthy knows what he's doing here. And you know, Matt Damon is kind of doing more character acting than I've seen him do in a while, which I really, really dug. I have lots of stuff we can talk about, but I want to hear from you guys some more. What are some things that you guys liked about it or didn't or whatever? Lo, do you want to go next?
Sure. I think coming into this, I am quite familiar with the case that this is inspired by. They were,
it's so tangential.
I know, they were really leaning into it with their marketing, though, and then the person in question was like, hey, I don't appreciate this, and all of a sudden all of the marketing pulled away the, like, based on, sure, this story. So I'm sort of aware of that because I'm from Seattle, which is where the person is from. I'm trying not to, like, name, because they, sure, don't want to be associated with it, so I'm like,
correct, I appreciate
but
that.
But I'm familiar with the case, I think, just because I was like a high schooler when it was happening and seeing all of that go down. And then also, I spent my childhood in France. I grew up in France. So I was already like, ooh, yes. Like, I love movies that are set in France, especially there's a ton of French in this movie that wasn't translated. And I was like, I know what everybody's saying. It has nothing to do with the movie, but it was very fun for me in the theater. But I, again, I just to echo you, I think Matt Damon, this is like, this is a character study of his character, and it's definitely a vehicle for Matt Damon to just stretch his dramatic chops. And I think it definitely serves that purpose very well, and he does amazing, as he is wont to do. He's Matt Damon. He's a phenomenal actor. I think the supporting cast was all fantastic as well, of the mother and daughter that he meets in Marseille, and then his own daughter, even the grandmother, who's like kind of a lesser character. Mm-hmm. There's a there's like a 20-something boy that's in this movie that also, I think, for the small amount of screen time he got, was amazing. I thought everybody did a really good job.
I agree.
It leans into some, not to always be the like left-leaning hippie here, but like leans into a lot of like racism issues that are happening in France right now, and touches on those, which I think is, and I think handled them well in like a very complex way. And yeah, there's a lot to really, really like here. Again, there was just a little thing that happened near the end that wasn't my favorite, but what can you do?
Andrew, what about you?
I know 15 guys that this character Matt Damon is doing is based off of.
Right, yeah.
Like,
yeah. You can tell he spent some time, you know, working on an oil rig, or, you know, with roughnecks, or, yeah.
If you just replace that Cabela's cap with a Bass Pro Shop cap, I know that guy. Like, yeah. I know, I work with every single guy I work with is that guy.
Yeah.
But it was really fascinating because because I know that person, it felt so real to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seeing him perform the way he performs, I was like, that's exactly how this guy would act if he went to France. He wouldn't try to blend in with the culture or anything. He would be 100% unabashedly American, like, while he was there.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Matt Damon does try to learn some French and stuff like that, but this movie reminds me of Taken, if the special set of skills that Liam Neeson had was construction and procrastination. That's what this movie reminds me of.
Yeah.
It's a long movie. This movie, I will say this, for however long this movie is, it felt three times longer than it really was, but I was still engaged. I was engaged throughout this movie, but I also was so aware of the time. I was so aware, like, it's not moving forward. The movie tries to go back and forth between him and what was initially his primary objective, was to try and get his daughter out of jail, and then also falling in love with this family that has taken him in, you know, and becoming a family. So going back and forth in between those stories kind of left me halfway thinking like the movie didn't know what it wanted to be.
I 100% disagree, and it looks like you're getting some agreement from Lo. So I may be the odd person out here.
This is three different movies, and like each act was the different movie.
I thought
there's some prisoners in here. There's some
man. I thought it was all integrated really, really well, and I thought it all served the overall movie. Like, the stuff you're talking about with the family, I think, is introduced beautifully. I think it's introduced naturally. I think, you know, it feels at place with what's going on. It doesn't feel forced. You know, and then it says something about his character. The complexity of this movie, I don't think, works without that stuff. You know, I think we need that stuff to feel the tension of the complexity the movie is trying to give us with that character. And I actually thought it went back and forth really, really nicely. I felt like when it went to the family stuff, I was like, oh yeah, I'm ready to see more of this stuff. And then when it went to other stuff, I was like, oh yeah, let's get back to this. So I had a different experience in that. And, you know, my wife and I remarked how it didn't feel as long as it was. Like, we were like, oh, that was longer than we thought it was. Because we were just in it. We were just in it with the characters and experiencing it. And so, yeah, I had a different experience in that regard. But I understand what you're saying. I just had a different experience, I guess, with the material.
I will say that the relationship that Bill, who is Matt Damon's character, has with the young girl Maya, it feels like one of the most genuine, like, heartfelt, emotional, you know, relationships I've ever seen.
She it's was so good.
Great.
She was so good. She is like good.
One of the best child actors I've seen in a long time.
I'm going to attempt to pronounce her name. Lo, you should probably do this rather than me. But yeah, I think it's Lilou Sauvaud.
I would say Sauvaud is probably closer. Sauvaud. But okay. But yeah, Lilou maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not going to claim to be an expert.
Absolutely. Absolutely wonderful. And yeah, so I think their relationship is key to this movie. I will also say I liked the private investigator that was brought in, Musa Maskri, I think is the actor's name. And some really complex, interesting things going on with that character. And I don't know, I was really impressed.
I forgot about him.
I was really impressed with technically how McCarthy told this story and how he kept me interested in all these moving pieces, and I was never confused. Like, I was never like, wait, what, how is that, how did that happen?
It wasn't
like
a confusing movie,
no,
for me at least.
But there was a lot going on, but I was never confused. So yeah, and maybe you can only do that when you know, make the movie two hours and 20 minutes long or whatever it was. But but yeah, anyhow, other thoughts from you guys, positive or negative?
I'm actually with Aaron on liking the ending of this movie. I really do.
Well, and when I say the ending, I mean a certain decision that actually happens about 30 minutes before the ending. I like the ending.
I get that.
But there's,
we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, but I really liked it. It that's whenever I think the movie picked up and got back on track for me. Whenever I was like, okay, yeah, let's do this. You know, we've been fixing faucets and sinks for the last 3.5 years.
It did not feel like that to me. That's so interesting.
It was such a long movie. I walked into that movie. I had so many birthdays and then I left.
This was your beach from old.
Yeah.
The two hours that you were there, you aged like 10 years.
Yeah, there was mold growing in my cup of soda because it had just been sitting there for so long. Yeah.
Lo, anything else you wanted to chat about?
I mean, the acting was phenomenal. I feel like that's definitely the best thing about this movie. I thought it was actually really well shot, too. I mean, like, this isn't the type of movie that you go in saying, like, oh, the cinematography, but there's quite a few pretty and interesting shots that they did. Throughout it.
There's a whole section. Probably Andrew aged about 5 years during this section, but I really enjoyed it.
Probably.
There's a whole
gray in my beard now. Look at this. I was a young man when I saw this movie.
There's a whole section involving I'll just say this to give away as little as possible, but involving going to a cliff and diving and swimming, and there's a whole segment of the movie, not just that part, but around that what's happening in that section of the movie. And I thought it was just so affecting and beautiful and compassionate and empathetic. And it's wild to, you know, to see where this, to think about where this movie goes in hindsight, like watching that scene and just, you know, how much, you know, what we're supposed to take from that. I guess I would ask you guys, so what do you think this movie is about without getting spoilery? What do you think this movie is saying? Because I have some thoughts, but I want to hear you guys.
I'll let Lo go first because I got to remember every single thing this movie was trying to say, because it was saying more than one thing.
I mean, I have to say, I agree that the movie was long, but I don't think I felt like it was as long as you thought it was. I'm like in between you guys. I mean, I would say that this is about like a father-daughter relationship, and honestly it's about two father-daughter relationships running parallel to each other, and I think that that's interesting, and I think it did a really good job of saying many things about those relationships. It was really complex and there was some mirroring going on, and
definitely Andrew, did you have any thoughts?
I think this movie also deals with regret. I think regret is one of the big factors in this movie.
Absolutely.
trying to get it right the second time around, I guess. But also, I think that this movie is I'm going to try and say this without getting into spoilers. You know, not following in someone's footsteps, I guess. Like afraid of becoming someone, I guess, mm-hmm. would be a safe way of saying it. But I hope you guys and those who have seen the movie know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I think that the movie's really saying that. And actually, the very, very last scene of this movie makes me go, what is your home?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is your home? Because there's a scene halfway through the movie where Abigail Breslin, who plays Matt Damon's daughter, by the way, she is giving a really good performance. She's restrained. It's very easy for that character I think it would be very easy for somebody to portray that character, you know, in a very different way that I don't think would be as powerful, actually. I think the restraint she shows really feels like she's hiding the emotion she wants to let out. But there's a conversation that Matt Damon and her have, you know, about their relationship with each other and trying to understand one another. And then there's another conversation at the very end of this movie, and I feel like it's not the same people.
Hmm.
If that's not really it, getting too into spoilers, I hope not. But
no, I think I understand what you're saying. I don't know that I 100% agree, but I do think I understand what you're saying. For me, I think if I'm parsing a lot of what's going on here, this is a movie about, and this kind of, I think kind of combines both of what you guys were saying, but it's about human relationship and the idea of when you have care for someone, when you love someone, sometimes it's hard to understand what the limits of that is. Like sometimes it's hard to understand how to process strong emotions and those kind of things. Every character is dealing with strong emotions about someone they love. And every character in this movie makes a decision at some point based on those strong emotions that may or may not be a good decision. And I think this movie is saying it is messy being a human and being in relationships. It is very messy and complex, and it doesn't always feel like it's easy to draw those lines between right and wrong. When you care about someone, and just scene after scene after scene, to me seem to kind of play in that same playground. You know, that I idea of what are my limits when I love someone? How do I show that? How do I make good decisions? What is the right decision in this case based on how much I love this person? So yeah, and it's definitely, you're absolutely right, Lo. There's a lot of mirroring going on with father-daughter stuff, and I think that plays in that same playground of you know, the depth of love in the places it takes us. Yeah, maybe in spoilers I'll give it, because there really are several choices that characters in this movie make, specific choices where it's like, I think that was the wrong choice. Like, I think that was morally wrong.
I think that's the point.
It is. That's what I'm saying. The point is, like, when you feel something so strongly as a human, it is sometimes harder to see those lines than when you're outside of it. Like, us watching it can go, I'm seeing some lines here that you're crossing. But I think we all know as humans, those lines blur when you love someone or when you care about someone, and it's more difficult. And the movie is so honest about that. And it's just a very real human thing. So, yeah.
We were actually whenever we were talking about Jungle Cruise, we were giving that movie flack for being really paint by numbers, not only for like the Disney formula, but also mm-hmm. like how we expect the movie to go. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that this movie decides to go in whatever feels like the most natural way, and whatever is the most natural way isn't always what is the most, I guess, script friendly, you know, tempo based, you know, way to go. And I you know what, if they hadn't have shot this movie in real time over 4 years, I think that this movie
we get it, the movie's too long for you. Well, there you go, some thoughts on Stillwater. You can check out Stillwater in theaters. Jungle Cruise is on Disney Plus and also in theaters. Before we get on to the best ever challenge for the week, just a reminder that if you would like to support what goes on at Sif Pop, You are certainly welcome to do that, and we appreciate it. That happens at Patreon, patreon.com/sifpop. Like I said, for our members-only show this week, the bonus episode, we talked about Disney rides based on movies and maybe some other rides that would make good movies and some of the rides made into movies in the past. I will tell you, there were many I didn't even know about that Lo introduced me to that Disney's made based on rides. Members can check that out in their own podcast feed without ads. You may want to look at the level that has the ad-free podcast feed. That is at patreon.com/siftpop. Thank you so much for your support, and we can keep going because of it. So thanks. All right. Best ever Matt Damon movies. Let's do it. He has been in a lot. Some of them he's in for 5 seconds, but he is in them. We will go number five to number one. And of course, if you have something higher, feel free to trump it.
Trump.
And we will wait until the person who has it at the highest. All right, number five. I'll start. I'll kick us off. I have Good Will Hunting at number five.
Same.
Nice. Lo, would you like to join us? Change your list?
No.
It's not your fault, Lo.
It's okay.
It's not your
I've
fault.
I've seen it. It's not a good movie.
Lo, okay. Lo, it's not. Lo,
it's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
It's not my fault.
That's one of the, okay, I know we're doing a bit right now, but can we honestly say that that's not one of the most powerful scenes ever?
Oh, it's such an incredible scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this movie has them. And I think one of the things that's so appealing about this movie is, again, how genuine Damon and Affleck feel in it, because you can tell it's from their experience. Like, you know, it's based where they grew up. It's, you know, very Boston area. And you can tell, like, you know, Matt Damon was never necessarily going to be a mathematical genius the way that's portrayed in this movie. That sounded like I was saying he's not smart. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying
he does like apples.
He does like apples.
He does like
apples. I'm just saying it's not literally his life story, but it is very much grounded in characters that they know very well. And it just feels so natural through the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And of course, Robin Williams is just doing incredible stuff here as well. So
he's so good.
So yeah, I had to mention it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to go with your number five, Andrew?
It was Good Will Hunting.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
Lo, what do you
Aaron,
got?
It's not your fault.
What do you got at your number five?
Mine is True Grit, the remake, the 2010 remake. Mm-hmm. I've seen the original True Grit a number of times. My dad's a huge Western fan, so I grew up watching Westerns. We went and saw this together in theater. So there's a lot of like personal feelings and nostalgia wrapped up in this as well, but I think Matt Damon turns in a fantastic performance. I think everyone in this movie does a really great job, and it's a very like Western without getting too much into it.
I actually saw this before I saw the original. So the original, I just saw the original within the last few months for the first time. And I liked it. One of my favorite John Wayne performances, you know, from some of his other stuff that I have also watched recently, because I've been trying to catch up on some Westerns, some classic Westerns, those kind of things, because it's just never been my genre. This is a completely different movie than the original.
Oh.
Like,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, there are some.
It's a Western. You actually have to watch its subtitles and it's spoken in English.
You look at any of these, like, and it's not like there's been a ton, but like 3:10 to Yuma was another one right around this time where they're like remaking older Western movies, and like, wow, they really change them to make them like more appealing to a modern audience. But that's fine. Yeah.
But it's good. It's really good.
They make them more genuine. They make them more genuine.
I agree.
What it was like the old, I know we're not talking about it, but the old 3:10 to Yuma, the ending of that movie is so much cheerier and happier.
And that's like the last thing you would say about the remake.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's just and I mean, like, a fairly young Hailee Steinfeld. I mean, this was like one of her early roles.
I think this was her big debut.
Yeah, fantastic. Did she get an Oscar nomination for this? Am I crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she didn't, if I remember correctly.
I couldn't tell if you were saying, yeah, Lo's crazy, or yeah, she got an Oscar.
It could both be true. Two things can be true.
That's two things can be true.
Lo, It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
Yeah.
Jake is occupied.
All right, let's move on to our number fours. This might get trumped. I have Interstellar at number four.
Yeah, true.
I couldn't, you know, I couldn't in good conscience put Interstellar in this. He's so not in it.
That's not what the thing is.
He's literally in the movie. I don't know what you're...
He's like... It's fantastic.
Welcome to the best ever challenge. Hey, this is how we play.
You know, I say this as someone who has historically made very strange choices in her best ever challenge list.
Sure. Okay, Andrew, what's your number four?
You ready for this?
Sure.
Team America World Police.
I didn't even know he was in that, like off the top of my head.
Are you kidding me? He says his own name like 15 times.
You know, I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Yeah.
Matt Damon. Yeah. Am I going to get a veto here?
No, no, not at all.
No?
No, go for it.
Okay. Yeah. Matt Damon. this is one of the funniest movies ever made. It's still one of the funniest movies ever made.
Yeah.
And it holds a very special place in my heart because I think this is the hardest I've ever laughed in a movie theater was at this movie.
So. Wow, that's saying something.
Well, that it came out something. When I was 14, and I think I saw it when I was 14, and I haven't seen it since, so maybe I should revisit it as an adult.
Your adult eyes may work better on this one. Yeah.
Because I remember hating it. I remember thinking it was really bad.
Listen, I'm not saying 14-year-old Lo wasn't intelligent enough or advanced enough or cosmopolitan enough to understand
this.
I'm just saying your adult eyes may serve you well.
But
you can check it out. I mean, you at least got the Eiffel Tower on the poster. So, you know, you've got that France connection. So there you go.
Yeah.
What do you got at number four, Lo? Yeah.
I have The Brothers Grimm, which coincidentally only came out a year later.
Nice.
I'm a really big fan of Heath Ledger, and I think both of them play against type in this movie, especially at the time that this movie was coming out, where Heath Ledger was the leading man in everything. He was a bit of a heartthrob, and you got Matt Damon playing the little bit more like the character, drama, you know, kind of characters, and they swapped that, which I thought was really interesting. I love fairy tales. It's definitely the type of movie that I wouldn't suggest to everyone. Even though I love it, it kind of was at the beginning of that whole, like, let's do everything dark and gritty thing that took over the late 2000s and into the 2010s. So when it came out, it wasn't overdone yet. And now looking back, it's like one in a sea of those. But I really liked it. It's a weird movie. It's very campy. It's like high form over function. Like, it's definitely not a movie for everyone, but it is one of my all-time favorite movies, so I had to put it on here.
Very well. That's what it's for. All right.
I remember seeing it when it came out, but I don't remember much about it.
I don't remember much about it either. I know I saw it as well, but it just didn't stay with me.
They basically take Grimm Brothers and like turn them into sort of like, it's very much in the same vein as like Van Helsing and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. If you've seen either of those more recently, mm-hmm. where they kind of take these sort of literary characters. Now, granted, these were two actual real people that, you know, they turned into kind of like action heroes for no reason.
Yeah,
I think if I remember correctly, you loved the movie. So weren't they like at the beginning of this movie, they're like faking all these like supernatural events, but then like some real supernatural stuff starts
they're,
to happen.
They're kind of conning people into thinking that they're being haunted or there's a witch or there's a this or a that, and then they'll come and save the day from their fake haunting, and then somebody enlists them when they've got a real issue that they're dealing with, and then they have to actually deal with that. You know, it's the plot of A Bug's Life.
There you go. It works. It works, Andrew. It works.
I'm just trying to remember The Bug's Life.
The brothers are the circus bugs that come in and have to fake fight off the grasshoppers. It works. It's flawless. Don't look too deep at it.
Yeah, it's all there.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
I think we're on to our number threes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My number three is The Martian.
Trump.
I figured you might. What's your number three, Andrew?
This is where I have Interstellar.
All right. Well, let's talk about it.
Yeah. He's in it, believe it or not. Don't blink. You'll miss him. Actually, no. He has a very fascinating part in this movie. And what he's doing with the whole... it's one of those movies I really don't want to spoil, even to this day. I think, you know, it's one, like, if you haven't seen it, I would say, you know what, just before somebody spoils it, you need to go and sit down. I've said so much about this movie already, so I'll just say, I'm going to echo everything I've ever said about Interstellar. It's one of the greats.
Yeah, it was interesting. I remember the first time I watched Interstellar, I was like, I love this movie. I think it was around the same time as Gravity, right? Like, weren't they?
I think Gravity was like a year or two before.
Just within a couple of years of each other, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
And Gravity was first. Am I correct on that?
They're a year apart, and yeah, Gravity was first.
Okay, so my memory isn't terrible. At least not in this case. But I remember coming into it and thinking, oh, this is very much Gravity, and I think that affected my first watch through. But I remember by the end, I was like, oh no, there's some really interesting things going on here that I need to revisit. By the time I got through the second time, I was like, oh, this is a work of genius. Of course it is, you know, and always turns out that way. And then by the third time through, I was like, okay, so Nolan isn't human. I get it. Whatever. So he's an alien sent here to communicate us the truths of the world using time-based shenanigans.
And Hans Zimmer.
No, I love this movie. I think it's amazing. Matt Damon is in this movie. I don't know if you know that. In fact, I think Matt Damon has more screen time in Interstellar than Anthony Hopkins does in Silence of the Lambs. So, you know,
Interesting. That's an interesting little tidbit, if that's true.
Yeah, but only one of them lead actor.
Low is Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs?
No, I would have to say yes, but...
Okay, all right. So I love this movie.
I bet Interstellar is longer than Silence of the Lambs, though.
This is true. We could do percentage of the movie. I had it at number four. Andrew had it at number three. Good stuff. What do you got at number three, Lo?
I have Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, 2002 DreamWorks movie, which...
With a sequel that just came out.
The sequel is awful. Don't watch it.
Okay.
All right. It totally ruins the first movie. You know, in a long line of animated kind of direct to DVD, now direct to streaming sequels. It's not great. But this movie is fantastic. Matt Damon is in voiceover the entire time. Like, he's the voice of the main horse, but like, this isn't a talking animals movie. He's narrating as like kind of the thoughts of the horse, kind of, and he's telling the story. I think it is a wildly complex and nuanced look at like cowboys and Indians, like all that sort of stuff that looks into colonialism, and it's like for children, and I think they do it really, really well. I've watched this movie many times and I always think that it holds up, and it's kind of having a bit of a renaissance. I've been seeing some people watch it again for the first time, probably because of the sequel that just came out, and seeing some people be like, oh wow, this is a good movie. I'm like, I knew. I've been watching it. It's fantastic.
All right. Spirit is the name of the movie. I haven't seen it. I don't think I've seen this one.
What? I think it's... I mean, it's got to be on Netflix, right? If they just came out with that sequel on Netflix.
You would think it's somewhere.
Is it Disney?
It's DreamWorks.
No, it's DreamWorks.
It's good. I would recommend it. I think that it's definitely holds up and is a solid movie.
All right, let's do our number twos. I have Ocean's 11 at number two.
It's in my runner-ups.
This is so good. This is like pure joy to watch. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, as are all these movies we're talking about, actually.
It's like Matt Damon knows what he's doing.
It's almost like he does. I've said a lot about Ocean's 11 already, but I love it. Love to watch it. Could watch it over and over again and over and over again for 19 hours. Basically the same amount of time it takes to watch Stillwater.
I think Ocean's 11, like the new Star Trek trilogy that's come out, is a testament to good casting and chemistry within casting a giant ensemble. Because this group is, they flow and they work together so well. It's like they've known each other for decades, it feels like.
The heisting is so good in this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's so good.
It's just such a great, like, structurally, you know, the heisting stuff. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, number two.
I'm going to go with The Departed.
Mm-hmm. Yep, had it in my honorable mentions.
This is, I think this was the first movie I ever saw when I first got to college. Like, I think it came out, like, right as soon as, like, my freshman year. All the new people were like, hey, you guys want to go see a movie together? And then we all went and saw The Departed, and we left changed people afterwards because some stuff happens in this movie. Have either of you seen Infernal Affairs, the original movie this is based off of?
I don't think I have, actually. I've been told I need to, but I don't think
It's really good. The Departed's better, but it's an interesting look because whereas in Infernal Affairs, it's really much about, you know, just the main three, I guess you could say, DiCaprio, Damon, and Nicholson. I think Infernal Affairs is more spread out and it doesn't feel as personal, so you don't really feel as invested for each of these characters like you do in The Departed.
Mm-hmm.
I also like in The Departed how they make Boston like a character that, even though I've been there once, it feels like as I was watching the movie, I became more comfortable with knowing like this environment and how people are supposed to act and stuff like that. A lot of that comes with, you know, a lot of the characters either being from or being very familiar with Boston. And everybody praises Damon and DiCaprio for their performances, but honestly, I think the person who steals this movie is Jack Nicholson. His interpretation of this Whitey Bulger-based character is so phenomenal. It's so exaggerated, yet it feels realistic, like a criminal who is that close to just mentally losing his mind. Like, he's channeling the Joker while he's also channeling Whitey Bulger. And it's such a fascinating and haunting version of this character. I love this movie. Also, the ending of this movie is beyond insane.
Nice. Lo, what do you got at number two?
Number two is another animated movie and is also a DreamWorks movie, Titan A.E. Which is lesser known even than Spirit, I would say, but is a fantastic sci-fi movie, a gorgeous animated movie. I mean, Don Bluth, if you are into animation at all, is one of the greats, in my opinion, and he has done a lot of fantastic movies over the years. Anastasia, like The Land Before Time, All Dogs Go to Heaven. You got a very distinct animation style, and this is very unique. Matt Damon is the lead character, and he exudes that sort of, like, you know, honestly, I was just talking about how in The Brothers Grimm, he kind of plays like a leading kind of cocksure character. Does that again here really, really well. And I feel like we don't see that from him super often. So it, I don't want to like get super into it. Have either of you even seen it? It's a movie that a lot of people have never heard of, let alone seen.
I've heard of it, but just never got around to see it.
Yeah, I don't think I've gotten around to see this either. I may have and just have forgotten it, but I don't think I have.
What you get for inviting an animation-obsessed person.
Love it.
On your show.
I love it.
Hey, 90% of the time it's just Aaron and I rearranging each other's lists.
That's right. So. You bring the freshness.
So yeah, it's a fantastic sci-fi movie, and I think if you are somebody who really enjoys sci-fi, you're doing yourself a disservice by not having seen this at least once. It's really solid, very well done, and like gorgeous, just absolutely gorgeous.
I remember when this came out, that people were saying that this was the movie that was pushing the next wave of what we should expect from computer animated movies. Like, it was like a step above what had been done before.
And it came out in 2000, so that's like right around the time that Disney was doing similar stuff with like Dinosaur. if you remember that movie coming out, which was like live action with animated dinosaurs. And like, yeah, they were doing a lot of interesting stuff all around that time with 3D animation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll check it out.
I think it's time for our number ones. I would be very surprised if Andrew and I don't have the same number one. But I could be wrong. I could absolutely be wrong. I have Saving Private Ryan at number
Trump.
One.
I got it higher than number one.
It's in my runners up.
Yeah. Saving Ryan's Private.
This movie that has a female name in the title.
Don't you dare.
It's one of my favorite Matt Damon movies. This is incredible stuff. Again, we've talked about this a lot because it's way high up on both of our best ever lists. So it finds its way into a lot of best ever challenges. Andrew, do you have anything else you want to say?
Even when they shouldn't.
Do you have anything else you want to say about Saving Private Ryan?
No, it's one of the most important and one of the greatest movies ever made. And, of course, Steven Spielberg did it. Yep. So,
there you go.
Yeah, all around.
Lo, I think we're aware of your number one as well. There's still one you've trumped that you haven't talked about. Yeah, you got The Martian at number one. I had it at number three. Kick us off. What are some of the things you love about The Martian?
I have already mentioned that I really love sci-fi. And this is pretty grounded sci-fi as far as sci-fi goes, but still technically sci-fi, near future type of stuff, and or hard sci-fi, as they like to say. And once again, I think that I just love when we get Matt Damon being a sort of like a very confident sort of thing. I think that he plays that character really well, and it speaks to me for whatever reason. So I think it's a simultaneously hilarious and heartfelt and sad movie while being hopeful. And I've watched it so many times since it came out, 6 years ago now, and read the book, which is fantastic.
Andy Weir is so good.
His newest book is also really, really good.
It's so good. I love the, it's, what was it called?
I just read it.
The Venusian?
No, it's called Project Hail Mary.
The Jupertinian?
Yeah, Project Hail Mary was amazing.
The Saturnite?
Yeah. Rocky is my new favorite character.
Love it. I really want to see them adapt that to a movie as well, because I love a...
They are? Ryan Gosling's
already?
Gonna be,
yeah, it
Ryan
just Gosling's came out like a few months ago.
Welcome to the Weircast.
But yes, The Martian.
I'd be all right with doing an Andy Weir podcast.
We're already kind of talking about the novels, but the novel itself is already just sublimely written, and the characterization of Matt Damon's character, whose name is slipping my brain, but is Mark Watney, is so funny and, you know, a little turned up from maybe what would be realistic in the situation, but I think it works so well, both in the book, and then when Matt Damon gets his hands on it, it just, it's brilliant acting, gorgeous movie. It's definitely, where you guys are talking about Saving Private Ryan, just always making it, if I can fit The Martian into a best ever challenge, I'm going to do it. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Nice. No,
I get that.
Totally understand it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually think that his personality, that comedic, you know, upbeat, even narcissistic element of him, that's really what gets him through the movie. If he was, and I think that's something that you see a lot, if you ever see like interviews and stuff with like Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin, any of those guys, they all have that rock star mentality. Like, we are the best of the best, and we're going to own it and drive sports cars and stuff like that.
Shoot yourself in a rocket into outer space where if any little thing goes wrong, you die. You kind of have to have that sort of, like, indestructible thought process.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm with you. I love this movie. It's so great. It was actually my runner-up. If I was going to get vetoed for Team America, then I was going to put The Martian at my number five.
We didn't have any in all three of our lists. Two of us had Saving Private Ryan at number one. Number one, Martian. Number three, The Martian. So, yeah, there's some good stuff there to check out. Interstellar also on two of the lists, and a third person just didn't feel like it... It counted for some reason.
It wasn't that it didn't count. It was just that I had 15 movies that I was like, these are all my favorite Matt Damon ones. And I love animated movies. So gonna get knocked out.
I will throw out Ford v Ferrari for honorable mention.
I rewatched it 2 days ago.
It's so good, right? It's really, really good.
We had some issues with this movie, and I'll say I like the movie more this time around, but I still stand by all the issues I originally had with that movie.
We didn't mention any Bourne movies. I think Bourne Ultimatum is my favorite, so I listed that in honorable mentions.
That's the best one.
Rounders. I love the movie Rounders. The Informant is really good, in my opinion. Contagion.
I've got Contagion in my runners up too.
Too soon.
I watched Contagion about a month after the pandemic started. Like, a hate watch, I guess. I was just like wanting to feel more hopeless about our situation, but it actually made me feel better.
Was it the first time you'd seen it?
Yeah. I think I'm the type of person that like lives my life by like comparing it to movies a lot of the time. And I was like, I think this is going to make me feel better. And even though it's a very visceral and scary movie, it did. I was like, okay, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, even if it gets this bad.
Did you feel like you were prepping? You feel like you were just prepping yourself?
Sure, a little bit, but it was more like a release of my scared emotions. Now, this is the norm now. Pandemic. It's our life now. Yeah. I'm not as freaked out, so.
Well, the ending of Contagion shows you just how easily a pandemic can start, that it just gives you that sense of like, oh, we're all screwed. If it's that easy, yeah. How hasn't this happened sooner?
It hits the same place in me at certainly a less funny movie, but it hits the same place in me that The Martian does, in this sort of like undeniable like faith that humanity can like face any like, you know, obstacle and come out on top. Like, whether or not that's the case hundreds of years down the road remains to be seen. But I do feel this sort of like humanity can work together and like get it done type of thing. I don't know.
I applaud your optimism.
It is a very optimistic look, especially in today's day and age.
I also had to mention Talented Mr. Ripley.
And Thor. That's come up a lot lately, that movie has.
And Thor Ragnarok. I had to mention
that one hardly counts.
He's in the movie. What are you talking about? Matt Damon is in that movie.
I know he is, but like for like a minute.
Yeah, that's how the challenge works. It doesn't matter how long he's in the movie. He just technically has to be in the movie.
Oh, sure. So when I do movies that were little bit over 24 hours for the Day in the Life challenge, I was getting endless crap. But when you guys are picking movies where Matt different. Damon is...
It's a little
is.
Different, Lo. Listen. When you've been doing this show as long as we have...
You guys get the nuances that I, just a newcomer, could never understand.
That's right. Any other honorable mentions? Lo, did you have any?
We already mentioned all my honorable mentions.
Andrew, what about you?
Let's go with Deadpool 2.
Okay, fair enough.
You want to talk about a real, real tiny cameo?
That's one that most people didn't even know.
You don't even technically see him, but he's there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually liked the Justice Bureau. I thought it was different.
The Adjustment Bureau?
What did I say?
Justice, but yeah.
Oh, I meant the Adjustment Bureau. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that one. And what's the new movie that just came out that we were...
No Sudden Move.
No Sudden Move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah. He does good work.
Well, there you go. Congratulations, Matt Damon. You're awesome. And you made a lot of good movies. Well done.
Oh, Invictus. I really wanted to shout it. That was the other one I was trying to find because I knew there was one I was missing.
He's doing some accent
I really
work.
Like Invictus.
Yeah, sure. All right, on to the buried treasure. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about? Lo, you are the guest. You get to finish us off. Andrew, you get to go first.
Aaron, I think you and I have the same buried treasure.
No, we don't, but I had seen it, and so it was in my brain, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah, The Green Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Saw this yesterday morning.
This was possibly going to be a full review next week, but I don't think it is, so I think we're good to talk about it here.
I checked our list, you know, to make sure it wasn't, and I saw that it wasn't on there, so that's why I put it on here. But I'm fine with saving it if you want to.
No. We've got stuff. We've got stuff.
Okay. Good, because honestly, this is a movie I'm going to have to see several more times.
Yeah, we could probably talk about it now and still do a full review and have more
to
say.
That makes me so happy because yeah. I've been looking forward to this movie for a really long time and like haven't had a chance to see it since it came out. But like, oh, that makes me really happy that you guys like it because it's like...
Well, I don't think either of us have said we like it yet.
It's your buried treasure.
I really like it. I actually really like it. Do I fully understand everything? No. I know the story. Like, I think everybody... Did you guys have to read the Gawain yeah. and the Green Knight in high school and stuff like that? Yeah.
Yes.
So it was one of those, like, yeah, I know the King Arthur, Arthurian legends and stuff like that. It's just one of those... movies where they took an Arthurian legend and they made it into a fever dream to where everything is so weird and you don't know what's real and what's not in this world. I have to say in this world because obviously it's in a fantasy world where there are elements that are going on, but there are moments in this movie where you're like, I don't know if what he's seeing in front of him right now is a dream or if it's real. The metaphors and that this movie's going through with, you know, cowardice and shame and stuff like that, or trying to find your destiny. Putting all that aside, which is good stuff, this is one of the most striking movies I have seen in a long time visually.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it does its best to... try and distance itself from the Arthurian legend. Like, they don't really name many people. Like, if you are familiar with the story at all, you could, or the stories in general, you could be like, okay, so I guess that's King Arthur, I guess that's Guinevere, I guess that's Morgan Le Fay. So you're just like guessing because they never name anybody besides Gawain, who they call Gerwin in this movie. Maybe this the actual pronunciation, I don't know. But this movie is strikingly beautiful. I want to watch it more so I can fully appreciate everything and fully understand it. Deb Patel is working on a different level than what I see him working at normally, and he's normally working at a really high level. But I think that he is asked to do so much in this movie that he really does do some amazing stuff. I really do like The Green Knight. It's just that if it was more, like, understandable on the first go-round, I would say that it was a phenomenal movie. But right now, I just really like it.
I agree with pretty much everything you said. Visually, this is a stunning movie. It's, if nothing else, it's an art piece. Like, if nothing else, if you understand nothing about the movie, which is a decent possibility...
yeah.
If you understand nothing about the movie, you will have many, many moments of wow. Like the just how beautiful it looks, how evocative is just the word that kept coming to mind. I don't know if this movie is comprehensible without homework. And that's okay. But it's not my preference. And it's the only thing about this movie that kind of brings it down a little bit for me.
You mean like understanding, like knowing the legends and stuff like that, or having read the story?
Okay. Correct. I would highly recommend you do a refresher on the story. And this is different than the story in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things in the story that I think are missing pieces to comprehending what's going on here. If you had never read that story, I think you would watch this and go, okay, that's a fever dream. Like, okay,
all of this makes me so happy. I'm like a massive
I will say,
like Arthurian legend
something
fan.
Something I didn't mention earlier. Don't go into this movie expecting an action-packed swords and shield, you know, fighting movie.
Yeah.
That's 100% not what this movie is. This is a look within oneself movie.
Oh, yep.
Yes, I'm so excited. Yeah.
That is so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely
love the ending of this movie too.
The
ending of this movie goes way, way up for me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see if I can find a showing of it today after we're done here.
Honestly, I saw it yesterday, and I already want to see it again. So,
I saw a movie this week that I also want to see again, and that is Pig. The new Nicolas Cage
movie. I want to see it so bad.
This movie's great. I loved this movie.
It looks like John Wick with a pig.
I described it as, I mean, I get that because of the dog pig thing, but it's a little bit different. But I described it more as Taken meets Chef.
Cool. Like, weird. Love it.
So yeah, there's a lot of interesting things going on here. You know, Nick Cage can act. He has as weird as some of his recent roles have been, as many of his recent roles have been.
Mandy.
This one's kind of amazing. Like he's doing some things here that are certainly within the quirky nature of kind of the Nick Cage thing. But overall, you're dealing with a character that I understood, that I cared for, that I, you know, that made sense to me. There's relationships that this character have that make complete sense, that are really beautiful. Thematically, what this is doing around the area of food is pretty amazing. So the way the story reveals itself is really interesting. This is just great, great filmmaking. And man, I had a really, really good time with this one. So if you've heard things about Pig and were like, I'm not sure. I mean, just add my voice to the voices saying, you might want to check it out because it's really interesting. So yeah.
Is it showing in town here or did you get a screener for it?
It's rentable right now.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's out. Okay. It came out for rent last week. So there you go.
Know what I'm gonna get. All right, Lo.
All right, I went buried. This is an older movie, but I also tried to go on theme with some live action Disney. The 1994 Jungle Book, Disney Jungle Book movie. This is another sort of deep cut. It's a movie.
Is this Jason Scott Lee one? Yes, it is.
I don't think a ton of people have seen it, but it's a movie I've seen countless times. I like owned it on VHS as a kid, and then I repurchased it on DVD, so I own it now on DVD.
Yep.
It's definitely not just an adaptation of the animated movie. It's not just an adaptation of the book. They kind of take the kind of themes and stuff from the book and the animated movie and transition them into a more adult, it's still meant for kids, but it's like adult characters movie. There's a sort of Indiana Jones type of, like, or like a treasure hunter aspect to it that I really love, including like traps inside of a temple, which is really fun. There's just this really cute and cliche in the best way love story. It's a a bit whitewashed of a look at colonialism in India, but it does touch on it a little bit, and it's not just like, oh, Indian people are savage and the British white people are the heroes. Like, the British white people are the villains, which is nice to see, especially for a 1994 movie. And, I mean, it's got an amazing cast. Jason Scott Lee, Cary Elwes, Lena Headey, Sam Neill, John Cleese. Like, you can just go on and on. It's such a fantastic movie, and I always recommend it to people whenever we're talking like, oh, live action Disney movies, and a lot of people don't love the new ones. And I'm like, watch the 1994 Jungle Book. I think it's really good. So
this is my favorite iteration of the telling of this story out of like all the adaptations, the cartoon, the two new ones. I think this one is my favorite out of all of them.
Wow, that's high praise. I really like the circus.
There's a lot of practical effects in this. Like all the I'd say 90% of the animals in this.
Yeah,
are
like
real.
The actual animals.
Like not like puppetry or anything. Like they have.
I think they might use some puppetry
who
on
get
the snake.
Jumped on by tigers.
Yeah, there's.
Stuff.
It's like real tigers, a real bear, real wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not that elephant tiger from Jungle Cruise. Then.
No. No, I think that I think Ka, the anaconda, is the only thing that isn't like a
purely
actual
real
animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only CGI
I mean,
thing.
Nice. King Louis this is has real. One of my like scariest quicksand scenes. in a movie I've ever seen. God. It's like, this is like when you think about like, like quicksand used to be so scary when we were kids. This is the reason that it like freaked me out.
This is the movie that did it for me. This is why I'm scared of quicksand. Is
it's
movie.
Really good, and it's a fun movie that I love to sit down and watch about every year or so.
No, it's Artex. I'm sorry.
That is a good one too. I would say.
I don't think that's quicksand though. I think that's
just real sad. It's,
I mean, it acts like quicksand. It acts
to be
like
fair,
quicksand.
The Artex one is sadder. This one is a bad guy, so they like
this is
so they like let it be really scary because you're like this bad guy's gonna die, like, and you like kind of aren't meant to want him to.
Quick, and that's really what made it.
Wow.
Oh, Phil's saying that it's not on Disney.
It's not, and it makes me so mad.
Wow, that's interesting.
Because they're probably like, that's a shocking movie that probably kids shouldn't
I think
have
it
watched.
Probably was like produced I was very young by, when I watched you know, it. Some such, and I think you can find it on like Amazon, like rent it.
There you go.
It's good.
That would be the 1994 version of Jungle Book. You may be able to find that on Amazon. Pig is available for rent wherever you rent stuff. And The Green Knight is still in theaters where you can check that out. Well, that's it. We did it, guys. We podcasted. It's amazing. Woo. I didn't know if it was going to happen there for a second, but it did. Congratulations.
We made it down the river.
Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to Phil for producing the audio and video show. Thanks to Drew for getting us some visuals for the video show.
Woo-hoo-hoo, good job.
And thank you to Lo for hanging out with us again and talking movies.
A pleasure as always.
Anything you want to promote? Any place you want to send people?
Gosh, I mean, as usual, Twitter is where I'm hanging out. About to, in the next couple months, launch a Kickstarter for a board game, which I guess is something to look out for. If you follow me on Twitter, and you're into that sort of thing.
Well, there you go. So follow Lo on Twitter and get up to at the Curious Lo on Twitter, and you can keep up with all that stuff. Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. There are many different levels. You can check out all the fun features, and one of them is to get every single bonus episode as well as the main episodes in one ad-free podcast feed. You can check all that out again at patreon.com/sifpop. Lots of ways to connect with us. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can also email us, feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than performing underwater puzzles when it's your first time swimming. We will be back next week with Suicide Squad, as well as some other fun stuff, and we will see you then.
Bye.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.